For once, Kim Jong-un is frightened by President Trump. I don't think he's been frightened or his father before him.
Talks and preparations continue for a Trump-Kim summit. It's Monday, May 28th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China aims for the far side of the moon. Athletes turn refugees in Australia. Rolling Thunder returns to Washington. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. officials are meeting with North Korean officials in Panmunjom to discuss a potential summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, according to the State Department. Spokesperson Heather Nauert said in a statement Sunday preparations continue for a meeting between the president and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Trump announced Thursday he was withdrawing from the scheduled June 12th meeting in Singapore, only to say on Friday that the summit might be back on. On Saturday, he said conversations about a potential summit were going along very well. South Korean President Moon Jae-in met Saturday with Kim Jong-un near the two Koreas' heavily militarized border. The leaders exchanged views on how to prepare for the North's possible summit with Trump, according to the South Korean presidential office. After the meeting, South Korea's President Moon was upbeat. VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked Bruce Bennett, senior defense analyst at RAND Corporation Policy Think Tank, about his reaction to the ups and downs of the summit story so far.
Well, I think the expectation of the U.S. government was that it would all be ups, that Kim Jong-un had decided to take denuclearization seriously, and it was all going to proceed forward. But the history of working with North Korea is that they always like to get the last little ounce they can. They are serious about trying to get the details on their favor. And it's also not clear whether we've got some degree of misbehavior by North Koreans or what. I mean, they failed to show up for a meeting 2 weeks ago in Singapore with the American advance team. Hard to tell what was going on. Was this something Kim Jong-un was trying to marginally get some advantage out of? Or was this a case of people just not doing what he was telling them to? It's hard to tell.
And now the speculation is not only on what's happening in the White House as far as divisions within the White House are concerned, but also what do you have to say about the possibility of divisions in Panmunjom?
Well, I think certainly the potential for divisions within the North Korean government. I mean, Kim Jong-un has established control of the country based upon an extremely ruthless approach of killing a whole lot of people. There have to be a lot of his elites who really don't like him, and in particular don't like the idea of offering up their nuclear weapons as something that they're prepared to give up to get better treatment economically. So there could be some pushback, or this could be a strategy to move ahead. This could also be his charm offensive to try to take control of South Korea, because he said his New Year's Day address, which is the State of the Union address for North Korea, he talked about unification a dozen times in that address, and he didn't mean a South Korean-led unification. He meant unification under his control. So is he working towards that as well? We just don't know.
Do you think that Donald Trump has met his match as far as a deal maker with Kim Jong-un?
Oh, I think quite the opposite, actually. I think Kim Jong-un has finally met his match. The North Koreans are used to Americans giving in to a certain extent and not really putting up anything in the way of response to the North Korean misbehavior. That's not what's happened with President Trump. Back when President Trump did his UN address where he talked about Rocket Man, Kim Jong-un wrote a personal response 2 days later. And he said two amazing things. Number one, he said, I didn't anticipate President Trump was going to say this. Well, wait a minute. In North Korea, Kim Jong-un is supposed to be the god. How is it that he can be a god and be fallible, that he didn't understand it? And the second thing he said was, you know, it's a North Korean statement, a frightened dog barks louder. But the whole rest of his speech, or of his statement, is showing that he's barking louder, calling names and making threats. For once, Kim Jong-un is frightened by President Trump. I don't think he's been frightened, or his father before him, by previous American presidents.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Bruce Bennett, senior defense analyst at the RAND Corporation policy think tank, via Skype. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. United States and North Korean officials discuss preparations for potential summit. South Korea urges North to salvage nuclear summit with U.S. Putin and Abe discuss Kuril Islands World War II treaty. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Now in space, after lifting off last week, China's new relay satellite is being tested as part of an unprecedented mission to land a spacecraft on the far side of the lunar surface later this year. The satellite will make possible communication between controllers on Earth and Chang'e 4's mission scheduled in December. Brian Harvey is a Dublin-based space writer, author, and broadcaster. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty this mission represents something entirely new for China's space program.
Up till now, China has focused primarily on reaching the same level of activity and technological development as the other space powers. And we have seen this in China's earlier lunar missions, in their first manned flights, and in building of a space station. But these are things that other countries have done before. No country has yet attempted a landing on the far side of the moon, and that is entirely new.
This is going to be a tricky maneuver, and there's no guarantee of success. How difficult is it?
It will be difficult. The Chinese seem to be fairly upbeat about it. China has had a very good record with its space missions. They have known very few failures, certainly compared to the United States and the Soviet Union in the early days of their space program. It is tricky. It is difficult. You're absolutely right. There is a possibility that this won't work. The launching was the first stage of a two spacecraft mission. The first spacecraft essentially is a small communications relay. It's about 485 kilograms. It will take 8 days to reach the moon, and it will then enter what's called a halo orbit, which is kind of describing a circle behind the moon so that it has the far side of the moon in continual view and is able to transmit to Earth at the same time.
What is the significance of landing on the far side of the moon? What might scientists gather from that mission?
The far side of the moon is quite different from the near side. The lunar far side is almost entirely uplands. It's very rocky. It's quite possible, we don't know, it's quite possible that the rocks there, the surface there, are the oldest part of the moon, and we may learn new science that we have not yet learned from the near side.
Brian Harvey said 2018 is an ambitious year for China, which is expected to conduct no fewer than 40 rocket launches, surpassing both the United States and the old Soviet Union in launching the most satellites. We're all starting out our week, and we're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. Some 200 people who have traveled to Australia for the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games have now applied for refugee visas, a sharp increase from previous estimates. Athletes from several nations, including members of some African national teams, disappeared from the Games Village in Queensland last month. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Refugee campaigners believe some of the 200 Commonwealth Games athletes and support staff who are seeking asylum don't want to go home because they fear they'll be persecuted because of their sexuality. Another 50 participants whose visas have expired have yet to contact Australian authorities, but would still be able to apply to stay. Officials won't confirm their nationalities, but reports say they're from Cameroon, Rwanda, Sierra Leone, and Uganda. Sarah Dale is a solicitor from the Refugee Advice and Casework Service, which is acting on behalf of some of the asylum seekers.
We've heard lots of examples in the media recently, such as people who fear harm based on identifying as homosexual. In a number of Commonwealth countries, it is criminalised to be homosexual. So it's certainly our experience that we will see some people who are granted protection. But as for the overall figures, we're not going to know that until the end of processing.
Initially, it was thought only about a dozen people hadn't returned home when the Games in Queensland State finished in the middle of April. The official number of athletes and staff has been disclosed at a parliamentary hearing in the Australian capital, Canberra. The government is increasing its annual intake of refugees this year to 18,750 people. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, a thunderous roar born from the Vietnam War rolls through Washington. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia, Russian President Vladimir Putin and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe have met in Moscow for talks, including the dispute on the Kuril Islands. The Soviet Union took the four southern islands in the closing days of World War II. The dispute has kept the two countries from signing a peace treaty, formally ending World War II hostilities. You'll find this and more online at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, it's Memorial Day weekend here in the United States, which for many marks the beginning of the summer season. Memorial Day is when the U.S. war dead are honored, and for more than three decades on the Sunday preceding Memorial Day, tens of thousands of motorcyclists have rumbled through the streets of downtown Washington. The Vietnam War in the late 1960s and early 1970s was difficult for U.S. servicemen during and after the conflict. It was an unpopular war in the United States, and many questions have lingered about servicemen who were unaccounted and did not return home. The idea of a protest to address the issue was born in 1987 by Marine Corps Corporal Ray Manzo. In gathering support for his idea, he met Army Sergeant Artie Muller.
The more we investigated, the more we found out we just wanted to do something. We decided to do a demonstration down here. In the first 3 years, we did a march and a run. And then after that, we decided we're just going to do the run. And it went from 21 to 2,500 motorcycles the first year. Last year, they said we had over 500,000 motorcycles and some 900,000 plus people.
Estimates of Vietnam POWs and MIAs have varied. Personal issues forced Ray Manzo to drop out of Rolling Thunder's annual planning. But with later wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, Mueller has kept the demonstration going.
We're here to demand the government do something about the lives they left behind. We're also here to support our troops that are serving now.
The throngs of motorcycle riders come from all across the United States each May. Michael Edwards is the president of a Rolling Thunder chapter in Wisconsin.
It's about a 15-hour ride, 16-hour ride. They leave Green Bay, Milwaukee, Chicago, and then they arrive on Friday afternoon about 1 or 2 o'clock here in Washington, D.C. But the total group, plus Rolling Thunder members, is probably 120, 130 bikes.
And as a veteran, he says the issues pressed by Rolling Thunder remain very serious.
We took the same oath of office as these legislators did, and the same oath of office that the president took to defend the Constitution of the United States. We take it seriously. Even though some of us have been out of service for 40 years, we're still veterans.
Virtually every military veteran among the sea of motorcycles staged in the Pentagon parking lot in Virginia echoed the same sentiment about their ride into the nation's capital just across the Potomac River.
This is a First Amendment right. It's the freedom of speech, and we're not going to be silenced.
The Mullers say applications for permits to hold Rolling Thunder next year will be submitted on Tuesday, the day following Memorial Day. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program online via iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our program or you can listen to it on the radio. If you happen to be out and about somewhere in Asia, particularly Singapore, catch us on Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic. Thanks to everyone there who tuned in today. And our thanks, as always, go to Director Tracy Carter, our engineer Zainab Abdel-Rahman, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.